So if you want to take risks buying shares of a company rather than the actual asset that the company is pushing out, that's your choice.
Like, have you heard the news that now the UK government has come out and said they're going to try and dim the sun? It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns does it.
Take one last look at the sun, Springfield.
I'm just wondering if we're going to wake up someday and it's like everyone has adopted Bitcoin, you know, like China, Russia, the United States, the EU, and like it's, you know, it was just all like bubbling underneath.
As long as you're holding your Bitcoin, you've already won this game, like way ahead of everyone else.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Rick and Tony are here with me, and gentlemen, we've got a lot of news to get to, so let's jump right in. Up first, we have announcing 21. Jack Mallers is now the CEO of they call it a Bitcoin native company and the ultimate vehicle for capital markets to access Bitcoin. I'm not sure if I agree with anything that he said there, but would be curious to hear your thoughts. Rick, why don't you take this one first?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and it's pretty fresh news, right? So I wouldn't say I've completely made my mind up about what this thing is or if I fully understand their plans, right? Because we're all kind of riffing off this 15-minute video that they released, and I think there's probably a lot more details to come. The first obvious thing is, look, it couldn't be more obvious that institutional money is desperate to get some sort of exposure to Bitcoin in almost any way that they possibly can. And, you know, maybe for some of these institutions as well, that's maybe debatable, but maybe it's difficult for them to go and buy spot Bitcoin, right? Because of whatever, you know, accounting problems and all this sort of stuff. I mean, you know, I would have thought it's actually quite easy to go and acquire some Bitcoin for them. But I think we're going to see more and more of these financialized sort of Bitcoin plays. What's interesting about this, you know, I've got a lot of respect for Jack and everything he's done in the Bitcoin space, but there's something about this that just gives me a little bit of a pause for thought, right? So I think the argument they're making in this video is that they're going to be more Bitcoin native than, say, like an ETF or maybe even MicroStrategy, right? Because they want to report all of their earnings as like Bitcoin per share. So instead of measuring the performance of their company in dollars, they're going to measure the performance of their company based on how much the shares are worth denominated in Bitcoin. And I think that's really interesting. I think that makes perfect sense. It's totally similar to the way the Bitcoin way does things, right? Like, we're not interested in dollars. We do everything with Bitcoin, right? All payments and all that sort of stuff. So that I'm totally on board with. The bit that I really struggle with is, and the bit that I can't get my head around just yet is, they're also going to report on something called the Bitcoin return rate, right? And the idea behind that is you basically buy a share in this company. It represents a Bitcoin per share. So let's say you've bought your share and it's now worth 0.005 Bitcoin. And then the idea is, as your investment grows, the Bitcoin return rate per share will increase. So over time, the one share you had that was worth 0.05 Bitcoin becomes, I don't know, 0.06 if it's accretive, right? So that's the kind of, that's the premise of this thing. Where I get a bit nervous about these things, or let me tell you why it just doesn't interest me at all. And the reason it doesn't interest me is that for your Bitcoin per share to increase, this company has to outperform Bitcoin. And over the last 10 years, I have never seen anything that outperforms Bitcoin, because the choice that you're being presented with is to either just buy Bitcoin yourself, right? No shares, no counterparty risk, just hold it yourself in self-custody, or take your money and buy one of these shares instead that represents Bitcoin in the hope that that share becomes worth more Bitcoin over time. But for that to be true, this share is going to have to outperform just holding the base asset. And maybe it does that for some sort of short period of time. But I honestly think in the long, long term, you're far better just owning the Bitcoin. And the other point I'd make is that for Jack's company now to outperform Bitcoin, just like any other company in any industry, even on a fiat standard, they have to provide value, right? And the one thing that for me wasn't clear about what their plans are from that video is, you know, they said things like, you know, and we will release high margin, high quality products and services. But there was no explanation of what that is, right? So if they're going to make more Bitcoin, so you get more Bitcoin per share, if I'm going to invest in that, I want to be really confident in the product or service that you're going to deliver. And maybe they do deliver a super profitable product or service that does result in you maybe getting more Bitcoin per share. But until I've heard the pitch, like, what's the product? What's the service? Because if it is just buying Bitcoin, well, that isn't adding value. And I don't think that will be necessarily accretive. So look, it's a lot to take on. And the truth that I want everyone to know is that there is no such thing as a return without taking any risk, right? So this is a more risky product than just buying Bitcoin. So when Bitcoin gives you such a brilliant compounded annual growth rate year on year, it will make you wealthy quite quickly if you save in Bitcoin. So I'm not sure why you need to add, you know, more leverage or more risk, because, you know, he says you're investing in the management company, he said in the video, or the management team. Well, management teams make mistakes all the time. So there's always the risk that you invest in it and it goes against you, right? So if you want certainty, if you want to save on a sound monetary standard and guarantee that your wealth improves, I would just go for Bitcoin. I don't think you need to look at these. The only exception might be your money's locked up in some pension fund and you just cannot get it into cash and into Bitcoin. Then yeah, I might move some of that money and bet on some of these companies if I can't access Bitcoin itself. But whenever I'm presented with Bitcoin in self-custody, or a stock, some other company buying Bitcoin, it's Bitcoin every single time because it's the guaranteed win.
Yeah, Rick, I agree with you. I think, first of all, I agree. I like Jack. I'm not going to sit here and rag on him. What he's doing is not something I would have any interest in doing. I think that my conviction in Bitcoin would prevent me from feeling like, you know, it would make any sense to effectively be servicing Wall Street, you know, is kind of the way I see it. I think what gets me on this stuff is if I'm a Wall Street firm who sort of understands Bitcoin and I want exposure and there's something preventing me from just buying spot for whatever reason, they're concerned about custody or, you know, who knows. Then I could imagine getting excited about this. What just boggles my mind is all of the Bitcoiners who are like, I'm going to jump on this. It's like you understand Bitcoin and you're investing in a company instead of for dollar denominated returns, hopefully, instead of Bitcoin. Like I understand cheering it on like, hey, this is how Wall Street adoption is maybe going to happen. Like, and Wall Street adoption means number go up. It means more exposure for the whole world. You know, that Bitcoin is real. It's here to stay. And then maybe we'll get more people interested. Marketing perspective. Awesome. I get it. But I just don't understand people getting so excited. Like I saw someone was like, oh man, I should have bought yesterday because it like, you know, went straight up. And I'm like, what? So that way you have to pay capital gains on unreliable dollar denominated returns instead of just buying Bitcoin. Like, what do you think Bitcoin's going to do over the next 10 years? Isn't that why you're in Bitcoin? So I don't get it. Again, pension fund, IRA, something locked up where you just can't buy spot Bitcoin. I get it. Very cool. I don't know why Bitcoiners are so excited beyond that, beyond the marketing for us. Tony.
What do you mean, man? You guys are not enjoying the entertainment in the Bitcoin space? I mean, this is all part of the transition, isn't it? It's very simple. You know, when people get excited over news like this and they call themselves Bitcoiners, clearly, you know, they're as much as they are Bitcoiners as I am, like a French cook, you know, so you understand absolutely nothing. Because Bitcoin, you know, as revolutionary as it is, really is the simplest thing to ever come out, right? It's an asset that's a store of value, a medium of exchange, and a unit of account, all in one. The world, Earth, our species has never seen it up until now. That's all it is. And the only trick, the only way to win in Bitcoin is to hold it. That's all you have to do, right? But since it's available to anyone, everyone's interpretation of Bitcoin is going to vary. You can't control this. So a lot of these concoctions, I call them, that are coming out in this space is just someone's understanding of Bitcoin and thinking they're going to build some sort of creative experiment over it to make more money while taking advantage of the one fact they all know is that the general population knows nothing. And so if they can whip up a product, market it with enough buzzwords and have enough sway, you can sell ice to an Eskimo that knows nothing, right? That's how I see this. So for me, it's just noise, but there's no such thing as bad advertising in Bitcoin. So whatever it is that they do, fundamentally, they have to buy it, right? In order to do all this experimentation, they need to own the asset. And so if you're holding Bitcoin in self-custody, again, it's a three-step process. That's it. And as long as you do this, who cares what they do? Let them come up with all these creative ideas. The more, the merrier. Because the ones that truly benefit from this revolution, the ones that really will see that generational wealth, are those that are simply doing nothing other than learning a few steps, holding their Bitcoin in self-custody, spending it and replacing it with dirty fiat, and just waiting it out. The scarcity behind Bitcoin is what's going to cause everybody's purchasing power to go up. So if you want to take risks buying shares of a company rather than the actual asset that the company is pushing out, that's your choice. You will learn it the hard way that, in fact, you're holding nothing but hot air and paying taxes on it. You can't extend the legacy system using Bitcoin. A lot of these guys, that's what they want to do, but it makes zero sense. Bitcoin was created to replace the legacy system. All we're seeing now are creative ideas just to extend its relevancy. You need to ignore all of this. It's either one or the other. You can't have a foot in both. But very few people to this day understand this. More will over time. I don't know how long that'll take. But those that are blessed with that understanding today, those are the winners in Bitcoin. Not the ones buying MicroStrategy, not the ones, you know, buying company shares that, you know, are using Bitcoin somehow. It's either you have Bitcoin or you don't have it, plain and simple.
Yeah, I would add something, Michael, yeah, by the way. Right. Like the thing that I find interesting about this is, like, think of the pitch. So you have, let's say, take Saylor, for example. He will tell you that there is no second best to Bitcoin. Well, if that's true, then why would I buy MicroStrategy? Because they use, like, if I buy the shares, is Bitcoin now second best because MicroStrategy is better? And take that thinking one step further. If shares in Jack Mahler's 21 company are going to outperform Bitcoin, well, then why doesn't Michael Saylor stop buying Bitcoin and just start buying shares in 21? And when you start asking questions like this, you think, hang on, this is turning into some weird little circle jerk because maybe we should all just be buying Bitcoin. That's what they're doing. That's what I'm doing. You know, it's a weird roundabout way.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think if I viewed Bitcoin as an investment, the way I think a lot of people are trapped thinking about it, then I think I could maybe get my head around some of these products. I think I want the number to go up ultimately over time. I want my purchasing power to increase. By that definition, yeah, it's an investment. But I think of it more as, think of all of its other properties. It's censorship resistance, it's permissionless. I mean, the fact that I can set it globally without a third party, no counterparty risk, I can hold it myself. All of that stuff is really important. And when someday when we've got wheelbarrows full of dollars required to buy your groceries, you can't cart around wheelbarrows full of MicroStrategy or, you know, whatever this, I can't remember what the product's called, you know, stock certificates to buy bread. But like, I'll be able to use Bitcoin to buy bread. And like, there's utility in that. So yeah, it's, we'll see what happens. Hopefully the marketing's good and hopefully not too many people get wrecked. Alrighty, next, this one's probably a shorter one, but so we've got a new BIP proposed, BIP 177. It is John Carvalho. He wants the smallest indivisible unit of Bitcoin to be called one Bitcoin. So, excuse me, I'm a bit under the weather. So effectively, instead of sats, you have 100 million Bitcoin that make up what we now refer to as a Bitcoin. So there's no longer a Bitcoin, 21 million Bitcoin. There are 2.1 quadrillion Bitcoin. And he's gotten a lot of heat for this. I'd be curious, Tony, what you think. It's so no value change. It's a naming convention thing. I'd be very curious if that's something that you'd be interested in or not.
Me personally, no, but I think this is just his personal preference. It's not like a right or wrong answer. It's just like his brain sees this making more sense. For myself, I think it's more confusing because I guess we've always been accustomed, like you have a dollar, then you have the cents and, that type of denomination. So I'd keep it, as one Bitcoin and denominate everything in sats, which I think will be the future of vocabulary. Like when you're buying stuff out and about, they're not going to be priced in Bitcoin. Like this cost 500 sats or 600 sats. Like sats is going to be the buzzword everywhere. So, and holding, like when you say Bitcoin, to me, it symbolizes like power, like true wealth. Like if you dilute it and call everything Bitcoin, then it loses a bit of that. So as far as I'm concerned, I'd rather leave things, the way they are now. But again, that's a question of personal preference. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer since the protocol itself is untouched. It's just you call it potatoes, he calls it potatoes. It's take your choice.
My sense is his thinking behind this is for people who aren't in Bitcoin, they see the price of one Bitcoin is, $95,000 or whatever. And it's a lot for them to stomach. They've never heard about sats. They don't know about zapping sats and sending sats and denominating in sats. Instead, all they can imagine is 0.000001 Bitcoin if they even understand that it's divisible. And so by his logic, if we can get people just thinking, oh, I can buy a sat for, or 1,000 sats for pennies. Okay. I can get my head around that. So Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? It's a big game of semantics, really. I mean, maybe if we'd have started with this definition, that might not have been such a bad design choice right at the beginning, because there is a beautiful simplicity to it, right? Like one sat is one Bitcoin, and then everything could be priced, a bag of chips could be 300 Bitcoin. And, and it's quite simple for people who don't understand that a Bitcoin can be divided into 100 million Satoshis. And by the way, we've seen the level of confusion that causes. Like, do you remember that lady? I think her name's like Francis Coppola or something. And she kept trying to say that, well, Bitcoin's divisible, so you can have infinite Bitcoin. And then we all had to explain to her, well, yes, but if you cut a pizza into infinite pieces, you don't get like unlimited pizza. That's not how maths works. So for those kind of people, like maybe simplifying things down into like every sat is a Bitcoin and then you just add them up, like maybe that kind of works. The other thing that appeals to me is, I famously got hacked, like lost all my Bitcoin. So if we do make this change, I will actually be able to have more Bitcoin than I've ever had, right? Because I can get my hands on 25 sats, right, at the moment. The only other thing as well, I think John's got some strong arguments in this, which is like, you mentioned it, Michael, the unit bias, right? We've all experienced this, right? It's so painful when you speak to shitcoiners, because one of their strongest reasons for buying XRP or whatever nonsense is that when they've got $100 and they look at, oh, I can only get 0.00000 whatever BTC, but they see, oh, I can get 500 XRP or whatever it is, there's something in their brain that just feels like, well, I should go in that way. And then they do this weird arithmetic where they say, oh, and if XRP goes to 10,000 and I've got 500 of them, and they start doing this math in their head. Now, we all know that they're stupid and that that's not going to happen. But maybe if you did change the denomination, you could kill that problem with unit bias, because now they could be like, I've got $50, I'll get 50 Bitcoin. And maybe there's less of that sort of issue. I don't know. I think the jury's out. And I think as well, with all these sorts of things, it's kind of pointless voting, because vocabulary and language just evolves. We'll end up calling it whatever becomes the most popular term, and that's just going to evolve and come out naturally, right? So I guess we'll wait and see. I mean, there was a huge campaign to call them bits at one point. I don't know if you guys remembered that. I quite like bits, like it's a bit of a Bitcoin. But ultimately, I don't think anyone gets to choose. The market will decide the name.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that. Well, there's a danger of language evolving too much. Hopefully this isn't one of them, because now we don't know what a woman is. But Rick, I have to stop you. I don't like when you rag on my XRP. Please leave that alone. Use another shitcoin as an example next time.
Well, and you're Alrighty. Right. If language evolves, we start putting Z's where we should put C's in words as well, right? Or S's.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Next up. All righty. We've got Samson Mao. He met with the Matrix, man. We are in a simulation. Satoshi Hamada, member of the upper house of the Japanese diet. I don't know what that means. He's a politician in Japan, I guess. And they're talking about the importance of Bitcoin. And I think we all know that Japan has had quite the economic turmoil. They are, I don't even remember what their debt to GDP levels are. I mean, it's wild, though. Things are breaking, and there may be one of these dominoes that people fear will fall. Tony, what's your thought? I mean, is this something you think? A lot of people think Bitcoin can unwind a lot of the debt problems that we face in the world. Is this bullish for you? Do you care?
No, it's extremely bullish, and it was expected. I mean, I called it last year. I said at some point every government is going to adopt it because they don't trust one another, and that's the only neutral asset that, you know, they can rely on. And so Bitcoin, as far as I'm concerned, has already won. It's already the monetary global reserve of the world. It's just waiting for, you know, these people to catch up to that reality. The only thing I don't like is that in the short term, they're of course going to try to use it to maintain their relevance. But Bitcoin is a separation of money and state. That means no politician's decision matters. Like, all of these old school tactics, those all die. The days of them honoring themselves with money and prestige, those all disappear with Bitcoin. But until they accept and realize that this is inevitable, we're going to have to, you know, live through and witness some of the most creative ideas that nation states are going to come up with in order either to extend their local currency or to manage their debt or whatever concoction they're going to come up with. But ultimately, Bitcoin doesn't change, right? Bitcoin is still the same. And again, it goes back to my previous point. As long as you're holding it yourself, whatever happens outside in the world only benefits you positively. As long as you're holding the Bitcoin yourself. That's the key. Three simple steps. So definitely bullish. Like I said, there's no such thing as bad advertising for Bitcoin. So nation state adoption, institutional adoption, all unavoidable. You can't stop it. And it's needed, you know, for the to accelerate all this.
Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, there's an inevitability about it. Just like Tony mentions, the game theory of Bitcoin is going to do what it's going to do. If you sit on the sidelines for too long, you are going to get left behind. And that's true for any individual. It's also true for any government, any nation state, any company. Like, nobody gets to escape that game theory of Bitcoin. So, and it's no surprise to me that Japan might look at it, because if you've seen the Japan or the yen USD price chart over the last 15 years, the yen, it looks like the ETH BTC chart, right? It's just bleeding out. And you know, the people of Japan must be starting to recognize that now. So maybe Japan tries to save itself by jumping onto a Bitcoin standard. What that would mean for the rest of the financial markets, who knows? Because the interesting thing is they're all connected to each other, right? So, you know, once countries really start to break from the system, I think they're actually going to accelerate the demise of the system, because once they all drop these fiat currencies in this mad race, it's going to get really wild. Kind of funny that the guy that they're talking to is Satoshi. I don't know. Is that like a really popular name in Japan? Like, maybe it's as common as John. If anyone watching knows, like, let us know in the comments. I don't know if this is like an irregular name or something quite popular. But yeah, the crazy thing about Bitcoin and governments adopting it is it's almost like they're voting for their own demise a little bit, because if we do move to a Bitcoin standard, then the government's ability to fund itself is going to be severely limited. So it's kind of like ignore Bitcoin and die, or adopt Bitcoin and accept that your power is going to get reduced by like 80-90%. So that's the choice that Bitcoin's giving you. It's like die completely or get on board, but become less significant. And I think knowing governments and knowing politicians, they're going to hang on. Some of them are going to hang on right to the bitter end, right? And they're going to die because they're just not going to accept being defeated. But the smart ones, and maybe the smaller countries with more to gain, they're the ones who I think will break ranks first, like your El Salvadors, like your Surinamese, and maybe even Japan, because they're in a bit of trouble, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I looked up the yen to dollar chart. It's pretty ugly over the last 5 years, 3 years. I like Samson Mao. I appreciate what he's doing, even though I don't find nation state adoption to be that interesting or something to cheer on necessarily. But appreciate that. I think he's trying to, you know, save people from max pain. And if we can make this a smoother transition, perhaps that's an option. It feels like it's been really slow. Like since I've been in Bitcoin, I've heard about, you know, people meeting with prime ministers and world leaders and this and that. I'm just wondering if we're going to wake up someday and it's like everyone has adopted Bitcoin, you know, like China, Russia, the United States, the EU. And like, it's, you know, it was just all like bubbling underneath and it's just going to blow someday. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Bitcoin Alrighty. Will deflate all egos, man, and wipe out all arrogance of all the smug faces that are out there. A lot of them honestly genuinely believe that they're going to be around forever. They don't know what they're up against.
Yeah, and Tony, that would be the day that we see egos dramatically reduced would be, I think, the day that I claim victory in Bitcoin, because it feels
it's
like
coming.
A long...
It's 100% coming. I can guarantee it to you from now.
I hope you're right, my friend. Alrighty. Tony, this is exciting for our clients. So it's official. Panama City to accept Bitcoin payments. What a time to be alive. We have many clients who've onboarded to a Plan B residency in Panama. And one of the reasons we identified it, Panama is a good option. Was obviously tax-friendly jurisdiction, it's a tropical climate, all these great things, but it's generally been crypto-friendly, so to speak, and now it looks like they are adopting Bitcoin in a meaningful way. Why don't you share your thoughts first, and then Rick, I'd love to hear yours.
Did we call it or what? You know, after 8 to 9 months of research, it finally, you know, was publicly announced, even though unofficially, it was ongoing. I mean, Panama, one of the things that I was looking at when we were studying this program is finding a country that was crypto friendly, right? And so there were a lot of services in Panama that accepts Bitcoin even before this announcement, which was very bullish. And there are even some banks there that are already Bitcoin friendly before this announcement, which we found out through, you know, extensive research. So the fact that they made this announcement means that the country is like just shy from announcing it as legal tender. Because, I mean, if you can pay for public services, then what's the next logical step, right? So very, very bullish for anyone living there, or anyone considering, you know, onboarding to our Plan B program. I mean, we've already known this. This is part of the information that we provide, but it's definitely something to consider now if you were, you know, still lingering on should I not. I would definitely do it because it's a great insurance policy to have in your pocket should you ever need it. And, you know, depending on where you live, some people are going to need it a lot sooner than they think.
Rick, you're looking for a new place to live. You want to get the hell out of the UK. Does this pique your interest? You need to brush up on your Spanish a little bit?
The UK, like, have you heard the news that now the UK government has come out and said they're going to try and dim the sun? It's like that episode of The Simpsons where Mr. Burns does it so that he can sell more electricity through his power plant. It's mental. So yes, escaping the UK seems like a wise idea because we're heading headlong into some sort of Hunger Games scenario over here. But I love this news, and I think a lot of Bitcoiners should love this news, right? Not necessarily because we ever wanted permission from anyone or any government, but here is a trend that's exciting. Because as Bitcoin becomes more and more important on a global stage and people realize this is just, you know, the best world reserve currency, I think nations are going to increasingly start competing with each other to attract Bitcoin and Bitcoiners to their shores. So That's exciting, right? Because it's kind of like the world is your oyster. The more that happens, the more you're going to find politicians actually, instead of telling us what to do, taking the knee and saying, please, please come to my country, right? I'll treat you very nicely, Mr. Bitcoiner. I know those other countries are being mean to you. So this, to me, really represents what Bitcoin was always about for me from the very start, which was making these people public servants again and giving us our money and our agency and our control back. Like, yes, we might still have governments in the future, but they're going to work for us instead of control, subdue, harass us, which is basically what they have been doing. Your money's borderless. And the cool thing about borderless money is soon the whole world's going to get a little less borderless if you're a Bitcoin holder. But again, look, I know we bash this drum until it's absolutely broken, right? But Bitcoin in self-custody is borderless, right? ETF shares, not borderless. Like, as soon as you link into the financial system, now all of a sudden borders become a problem again. Whereas if you can, you know, remember 24 words in your head, jump on a plane, like you could never move money like this before. That's absolutely crazy. So yeah, you know, I think that's the next natural progression for someone who really came to Bitcoin because they want to be free, because they want to be sovereign. Is, man, look, now you've got this borderless money. Look at the options that are now, didn't exist for you before, but exist for you now. So it's also, it's not just about running away from Keir Starmer, which would be my motivation. There's also an element of like running towards like adventure and this amazing like quality of life. And now instead of being caged on, you know, one imaginary set of lines on the map, you can go wherever you please. And that gets me fired up. Like, that's what Bitcoin's all about, right? Freedom, adventure, exploring the world, enjoying your life. And hey, Panama's a great place, right? So definitely worth checking out.
Well said. All righty. Our favorite punching bag, Coinbase, is at it again. They are teaming up with PayPal to advance stablecoin payments, which, as I understand it, I don't use stablecoins, but as I understand it, it's pretty easy. I'm not quite, I guess they want to make it easy to accept it, you know, retailers or what have you. But Rick, what do you think? You want to maybe take some shots at Brian Armstrong for me?
Man, honestly, I've run out of bullets at this point. I don't even know what to say about the guy. Like, man, I honestly, this sort of stuff might be so retarded that even I can't keep up. Like, I have no opinion on it. I really like, so you've built Coinbase, this like Bitcoin company. We're talking about, you know, the future of money and all of this stuff. And then he's like, and then I'm going to go and work with PayPal. Like, I don't get it. Either I'm too stupid to understand it, or it really doesn't make any sense. I have no interest in Coinbase, no real interest in stablecoins either, if I'm honest. I do think there's a use case for stablecoins in for people in other countries that don't have access to any sort of useful currency. Maybe for this brief window before we get to a Bitcoin standard, this may be a use case, but I don't understand what Coinbase is for anymore. I really don't. And I think in 5 years, Coinbase might not be so significant because it's just not a well-run company. Other people will overtake him and do a better job. So yeah, just more rubbish out of Coinbase. Stay away from that place, in my opinion.
Yeah, Tony, not one of the exchanges we recommend. What do you think about them promoting stablecoin payments?
Well, it's not surprising, man. I mean, Coinbase is a casino, right? So, I mean, they're going to look for any ways to make money. Keep in mind, we live in an echo chamber. I don't know why this is so surprising. What we know, you know, 99% of the world, like, has no clue even exists. It's like, think of it, we're talking on Mars and they're on Pluto. You know, like, we're on one planet and they're on a completely different universe over there far away. That's the world we currently live in, even though it may seem that everybody understands what we know, but the reality is they don't. And so these guys know this as well. And so they can sell all this rubbish to folks because why not? It'll work. You know, like, if somebody needs access to stable coins because they need it, well, choose us, you know, and we'll charge you a smaller fee than the competitor. That's what these guys are doing. Eventually, I don't know when, but eventually, you know, people are going to realize that anything that's not Bitcoin is completely rubbish and, you know, hopefully transition. But this is not for tomorrow. This is why you hear all this talk about stablecoin regulation and all that, because one, it's the only thing they can regulate. And two, it's like, what else do you want them to do to remain relevant? They're not going to say, okay, forget the dollar. Let's just walk away, guys. Satoshi won. You know, even though we'd like that, that's just not how it's going to play out. But it will happen organically. We just have to be, you know, be patient enough. And again, as long as you're holding your Bitcoin, you've already won this game, like way ahead of everyone else.
Amen. So for anyone listening who wants to get their Bitcoin into proper self-custody, which you should do, you need to do, no KYC, no counterparty risk, none of the nonsense, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you do it the right way the first time. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We've got, as we mentioned, a Plan B residency option in Panama, where they are now accepting Bitcoin in Panama City. It's a freedom-oriented place. You'd love it there. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule 30 minutes with a member of our team. Of course, if you're enjoying these episodes, do us a huge favor. Give us a like, subscribe, comment, do something to feed the algorithm. That's what we're all about here. That's why we come up with these catchy thumbnails. I hope you like whatever we come up with today. And appreciate you being here, tuning in. Gents, thank you guys, as always, for the time. Look forward to catching up with you guys next week.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, Michael.
Cheers.